The aspect here is some good players, or maybe even the odd great player who isn't like the greatest, they're almost willing, by just playing their own game, letting the opponent play his game and just seeing what happens, they're willing to let fate kind of control them. They're willing to just say, okay, I'll play my game, and did I win? Was it the right era? Nah, it wasn't. I tried my best. Maybe I came close. Okay, that's enough for me. I've won some titles. I didn't win this one. Not as big a deal for me. There's a degree to which I sometimes felt like Khan and his Fnatic teams were sometimes like that. They had, in a weird way, they were a bit accepting of it. Whereas the guys I like are the guys who, in a sense, are kind of tortured by not winning like that. This is what someone like Getright's like. If he loses, even if he plays great in the final, he thinks to himself, like, there's something I could have done. There was still a round where if I'd made that move differently, or, you know what, I should have known when I watched the demo. Like, I saw it, but I did, like, I the notion crossed my mind that they might do this, but I didn't really consider it enough. If I thought about it enough now, in hindsight, I can see that that's the approach they'd take. I can see that's what would happen. And this is the thing. There's an aspect, I made this point in my video about the StarCraft 2-1, about the guys who won the silvers. There's a problem that people who aren't champions, who haven't been very successful, have, where they think to themselves, and even players, by the way, who've never won the big one, think this. They think, no matter how many times I've lost, if I just won it once, that's enough for me. I'm not greedy, I don't want more than that. If I just win once, I'll enjoy it, and you know what, who cares if I lose after that? I'm a champion, I did it. No, the greatest players understand this core concept of life itself, which is that you can only live one day at a time. Doesn't matter if for the last 7 days, the last seven finals, you won, you did your best, you succeeded, everything went great. If tomorrow you wake up, you have to only live tomorrow. That's the only day that's going to be there. It's going to be today at the time, obviously. That's the only day you can live. And so on this day, if you lose, you lost on that day. Doesn't matter what happened yesterday. Doesn't matter what happened tomorrow. You had to try and win on that day. And so the greatest players are the ones where they have that mentality. They break it down. Not only are they studying the details of their craft, but in this sense as well, every day they're trying to win. If they know every final they get to, it doesn't matter if they've won 17 finals. If in the 18th final they know they have a chance to win, they're in the game, they have moments where they're close to winning that, beating that guy, they're not ever going to afterwards say, oh, it doesn't matter that I lost that one. They're going to be like, I should have won that. I could have. I was there. Like, fuck all those other titles. I wanted that one. That's the one that I had to win and I lost it. Fuck, and they're going to obsess over it. The greatest players. There's a great quote I once heard, Doug Collins, the guy who was the coach of Michael Jordan, his second coach during the late 80s. And then it was when Phil Jackson took over that they won all the titles. So he kind of saw Michael Jordan just before Michael Jordan became the god, when he was already an incredibly high level, but he hadn't quite fully crafted his game and hadn't got the right team and coach around him. And he once said, greatness, talking about like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, these sorts of people, he said, greatness is greedy. It's the idea that even when you're amazing and you can exert this effort, you always want more. You're reaching for more. You never allow everything just to be in your grasp. You're reaching for the next thing. You're pushing yourself, forcing yourself to improve. But this might sound like an abstract point, but this is a very important point to understand in the context of esports. If you want to appreciate greatness and the things that separate the greatest player from just very good players, or just top players with skills, but who can't make the transition to greatness, is that the greatest players of all time in every esport, the absolute greatest, are the most fundamentally sound players in the game. And this also goes over to sports itself and life in general, actually. There's a great John Wooden quote that made me think of this topic, which is, John Wooden was one of the all-time great college coaches in basketball, okay? And it's a quote that said, I've got it written down here, it says, when you see a champion, you can be sure that you are looking at an individual who pays great attention to the perfection of minor details. Now, notice there, he didn't say, when you see a champion, you can be sure you're looking at the most skilled individual out there. You can be looking at someone who can do things that other people can't. The thing he focuses on is someone who's paid great attention, who's paid great attention to the perfection of minor details. Keyword minor there. Not even just details. What would seemingly be the most insignificant, the most minuscule, like, oh, it's a small aspect. Oh, everyone knows that. Everyone learns that when they're 8 years old. We all know that factor. Like, I'm decent. I'm a great player. You know, I can do that in my sleep. No, these people have paid great attention to perfecting the minor details, because when they've got that fundamental skill, the fundament of their game in place, this incredible base, and it's better designed, better constructed, it's more solid, it's more sturdy, then they can build on that and then use their talent and their great skills and their ballsiness and their confidence and their play to then add on top of that, push themselves over the top and be the greatest ever. If we go to another game, CSGO now. We'll go to CSGO and we'll take Scream or Guardian, incredibly flashy players. Scream especially could have these insane two-bullet headshots, just take over heart, a three-round stretch where you're like, who could even do that? But I'll take Getright any day of the week. Getright doesn't have the same skill level Scream does. He's one of the most skilled players, but Scream's ahead of him in terms of skill. Guardian probably in terms of the speed he can hit shots at. But Getright's fundamentals are so incredible that even with slightly less skill, his fundamentals are so good that his consistency game on game when he was the greatest player ever was just going to be so far ahead of you. Then add in a lot of skill, and you just couldn't match this guy. He was good at everything. He was well-rounded, understood exactly what he wanted to do in the context of his play, whereas Guardian and Scream, actually, even as great as they are, sometimes struggle to know what they want to do in their context of the game. When they're losing, when their shots aren't hitting, they actually really find it difficult to know how to contribute to a game. What do they do when they're limited, when they can't hit every shot, when they can't take every crazy shot? Do they still do it? Do they play more passive and then not have any effect? These guys aren't really sure how to approach it. Getright knows how to play his A game, his B game, his C game, his D game. Getright's D game could win you a championship in his prime in like 2013. You can't say that for these other guys. Some of these other guys, sometimes their B game won't win them even the actual match itself. They could still lose with their B game going totally on fire.
And another example has to be Guardian, because actually I think Guardian's a great example of someone who actually was more than good enough at Cluj-Napoca Poker Major and prior to the semifinals of the MLG Columbus Major. He was already good enough to win a major. He was already good enough to be the MVP. For me, was the MVP of DreamHack Cluj-Napoca Poker. But for some reason, his teams could just never win, no matter how many times they got to those big finals and he got into those major finals. It just wasn't on the cards for him somehow. And there was something perversely enjoyable about watching his efforts regardless, about how hard he tried and about how he pushed his teams, even if they weren't able to make it over the hump. It's not like the ending of the movie being something that you didn't necessarily find pleasing makes all the fantastic action and story and plot unfolding before somehow void or moot because it didn't end the way you wanted it to. It was still an incredible journey to watch. Because yes, the guy who's the typical many time champion, the guy who's won 3 or 4 championships in his career, yes, a lot of those people are lucky, are blessed to have rock solid self-belief. These are the people who don't question themselves, who don't seem to second-guess themselves in the moment, who don't seem to hesitate. They just act, and they don't always win, but they win a lot as a result, and they seem to have that purity of intention, that single-pointed attention that people have been talking about in Eastern mysticism for many, many years over in, obviously, China and Japan with Zen Buddhism, and you can go into the Hindu philosophies of meditation, tantric yoga, etc. So, yes, these guys are in a position where they almost seemingly just have the mindset to win from the get-go. But these other players, first of all, sometimes they can break through and develop that mindset. Sometimes it happens. But also these guys, they have the talent, sometimes more talent than the guy who's the big winner. But you can see them in their matches trying to overcome these issues. And sometimes when they can't address it psychologically, they try to overcome the psychological problem by preparation, by dedication, by practicing even more, by trying to work on their craft even more. People like Peyton Manning, fantastic examples of this, where they try to overcome any psychological issues they have by making all the rest of the game even more polished, by trying to find more effective ways to play the game so there are less instances where they're going to break down. And as such, it can actually be more fun to watch these great players toil and try and eventually fail than to watch great players sometimes win easy matches that don't seem very difficult and they just cruise to victory without having to show you all that they have in the tank, all the skill set that they have capable and just how far they're capable of pushing themselves.
The point is, in all these eras, even if there was a best player or a perfect player at that position, They were part of a pantheon of gods. There were other great players and there would be others at other positions who were comparable. And actually the debate then became, well, which position do you prefer and which position do you think and what kind of impact do they have on their team? And how do we define best right now? Are they most effective? Is their play having the most impact? Are they the best individual skill-wise? But there was always slight things missing from all these players, like minor areas. In Faker's sense, like I say, he's not just the best mid laner. He's not just the best player. He's just the best so far it's possible to imagine or conceive of. And the reason why I keep stressing that aspect is because that didn't have to be the case. He could have just come along and been the best mid laner and the best lore player, and that would be enough. And he could even be the greatest lore player, and that still wouldn't be what I'm saying. It's not just that he's the greatest lore player. It's that his perfection in so many areas, his mastery of so many different areas of the game, that usually even great and godlike players only have, say, 2 or 3 of these qualities are the best, but then this one's like an okay quality. This is like a mild weakness, but it's covered up by the style of play. Faker has nearly, if you're doing rankings of like levels on each possible aspect of the game of League of Legends and being a pro player and an impact carry player, Faker would be, if not a 10 in every category, like at worst an 8, if not a 9 in every single category possible, like laning, team fighting, matchups, champion pool, understanding of how to outplay people, how to create plays, playmaking. Obviously not shot calling. I guess that's one, actually that's maybe the one area you could take it down, but that isn't usually how we judge most players. Usually shot calling is a separate area, but you see the point. Longevity, consistency, performance ability, clutch play, ability to rise to expectations, any aspect you could come with, he's just topping it out. All of this adds up to make him an impossibly good 1v1 player. And part of his 1v1 brilliance is this kind of calculating yet opportunistic aggressive play. So when there is an opening available, he not only somehow instantly recognizes that it exists, but he's opportunistic in the sense that he will just, without hesitation, pounce and take that moment and force this play. And it's not even that an opportunity is available as in it's presented. Like you see a window and he's like, should I go in now? It's like when he can visualize it's even possible there is a window of opportunity here, he will act, make it happen. And the other player sometimes, even these great god level mid lane players in Korea and other regions, it's the reason why it's so shocking that the play occurs is that until the play's initiated and they start to see how what's unfolding, sometimes they didn't even know a play was possible here. They might be under their tower, they might be near the base, they might have just moved out of range, they might have actually gotten the first ability off on him and think, right, well, I'm going to outplay him now. Like, remember when Nagne from KT Rollster landed the charm on Faker's Victor and got him like down to 2/3 health to near a half health, and Faker still did all of his abilities perfectly to completely outplay Nagne and get the kill. This is an example of where he just knows when it's possible to make a play, or he can visualize what the possibilities of the champion are, the limitations that exist, and then abuse the max level of it to just make plays that no other player can even imagine. Now, in terms of his skills, in 1.6, and some of this translates to CSGO, he had unreal aim, probably the best aim ever. Like, just in terms of utterly, the peak that he could hit with his aim was unreal. And his style of how he used the techniques. He's a guy who looked like he had a lot of technique, but part of it is because his talent was so amazing, he could make techniques just work that overall weren't that consistent. Like, when he burst, the normal way you burst, a perfect technique for bursting with an AK or a Colt in 1.6, is you either fire two bullets, and you fire the first one, then the second one, you try to pull it down and get it to the same spot as the first one. You either fire two, or if you've got a little bit of better aim, you might fire three, just to make sure with the third one. And that's going to get you a headshot kill if you aim it onto them. Now, Forrest would fire up to five bullets on his burst, and yet it would seem as good as the person who did the two bullet to three bullet burst. Now, the reason why you only do two to three, because after that, if you don't kill him with that, you want to reset, then do another really accurate two to three bullet burst. He, on his fourth and fifth bullet, his aim and accuracy was so insane, he would be getting his headshot on the fourth and fifth one. That's why he could do that insane burst. No one could quite burst like this. It was really impressive. At least, others could try, like Get Right and Gooks could try, but they weren't quite as consistent with it. He was amazing in this sense.
Consistency. There was like a year where he just never had a bad tournament, seemingly. His killer instinct was nuts, hence the clutch wins, hence the MVPs, hence dominating the finals. He had an amazing drive. I think there's very few players have ever come close to his drive. I would say you're talking people like Device, maybe you got to throw in Elige. I've heard Nico actually had very good work ethic, Cold Zero at certain points in time. Unbelievable. And as a result, along with the drive to win, the work ethic goes hand in hand with that. If you really, really want to win, you put in the fucking work. You don't become the best just off skill. You become the best from skill on the platform of all the preparation and work is done, and that's why you know you're the best you can possibly be.
Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? And that's in part thanks to my Patreon community, the Skrilluminati. So this video was kindly supported by Frisky, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Ahmed Haju, Jensen Gore, Tobias Bernasconi, Adam Tomlin, Animosity, Toucan, Tosh, and you know it if you've ever seen my videos before. If you don't get to know it, because a special thanks goes out to my main man, Jerky's Minion. Why not ask a question for my video AMA? Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest? Maybe you want to see who the upcoming guests are on my shows, on my interviews. Or do you want to be part of one of those lengthy esports discussions where you set the table of topics? Well, if any of those perks or others catch your fancy, put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today. Where? Via the Patreon link in the description box.